This is Sonic Boom Radio. I am Dr. Boom. Today we present an edition of Radio Radio, an interview program from Buffalo, New York. This show features an interview and music with Mr. Plunderphonics, John Oswald.
John, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Tell me exactly what Plunderphonics is. Most people have a kind of general idea of the principle. It's borrowing music that's already out there in the world and rearranging it. But what's the larger philosophy behind it? How do you describe it to people?
Well, I don't know if I can tell you exactly, and I don't know how philosophical I can be. It's a category that I use for the presentation of certain aspects of the music I make, or certain pieces that get made that seem to rely largely upon quoting existing music. So Plunderphonics, I think of as being ideally very familiar music to most people, which in some way is very unfamiliar to most people. It's familiar perhaps to people that are Plunderphonic aficionados, but it's much, I think, stranger for the average person who would, in most cases, recognize the sources. So there's this perhaps double-edged sword of functionality of it being familiar music, which has a certain effect on people. Things that you know get inside your head in a different way from things that you aren't familiar with. And there's a strangeness to it that messes around with that familiarity. That's Plunderphonics.
What exactly happened legally around Plunderphonic?
Lawyers talk to lawyers. I had never more than one lawyer in my employ at a time, and quite often I had volunteer work from lawyers. But in the end, in response to some demands from a lobbying group that represents the major record labels, and the Canadian arm of that lobbying group representing Michael Jackson, and in the sense of Canadian law, acting as the fictitious author of works by Michael Jackson, complained about certain aspects of the Plunderphonic CD. And so they made certain legal demands, and I responded by making certain suggestions through a lawyer, and we came to an agreement. In short form, the agreement entailed my giving any CDs that I had remaining in my possession from the pressing of Plunderphonic to them. They crushed those CDs in addition to master tapes and various other things I gave them. And the agreement included allowing me to talk about these things, which is why I can tell you this. That's the short story.
What aspect of it offended them the most?
Very definitely there was the cover graphic, which was a collage of Michael Jackson on the body of a woman who happened to be naked and happened to be white.
So it had nothing to do with the music, really. It was the cover graphic.
Well, initially it had nothing to do with the music because they wouldn't have noticed on the basis of the music. I spoke to the president of the Canadian arm of this organization. It's the RIAA in the United States, and it's the CRIA in Canada. And this man, Brian Robertson, was shown the packaging for the CD in the context of being interviewed for yet another radio show on the national radio here in Canada. And he became very upset about this image. And called me up to get a copy, which I sent to him. And gradually, mostly by calling me up and asking me what was going on, he informed himself as to the contents of the CD, because he seemed to have had quite a bit of trouble figuring out what was going on by listening to things. And for some reason, he wasn't very good at reading the credits that were printed with the package, which very explicitly credited everybody that was being quoted or electroquoted, including Michael Jackson. So after I just let him know what was going on in a series of phone calls, they made some legal threats, which I decided to negotiate with them on. And that was that.
If someone wanted to get a copy of that CD, is it possible?
A copy of that CD. Those CDs that were no longer in my possession that I had sent out, and this is in a two-month period between Halloween and Christmas of 1989, are still out there. There was an attempt by CREA to get me to recall everything I'd sent out, and part of my negotiations was saying that that was impractical and undesirable. So all those people, or not so much people as organizations, because they mostly went to radio stations, libraries, and journalists, either still have those things or they've bartered them off or traded them off for... and so a copy will show up every once in a while in a used record store. Prices have gone as high as, I think, $1,000 U.S., there's about 600 copies around, so it's not that rare. But that's, I mean, I think each of those 600 copies is trivial in my sense of trying to distribute the music that's on the CDs, and that it's very easy to copy them and distribute the music that way. So it's freely available on the internet in several different forms, including if you're really fussy about things, you can get the same bits that are on the CD by fairly massive download.
John, how did the legal wrangling around that CD affect the trajectory of your later work?
Well, that's hard to say. I think in some cases people may have shied away from working with me because it seemed like either what I was doing was legally contentious or in some cases, some ill-informed cases, that it was illegal. And nothing's ever been proven to be illegal, or there's never even really been any discussion about its legality. So perhaps some people didn't call me up. Perhaps some people heard about this and thought it would be interesting to try something on the wild side and get involved with me on some kind of project. Something like Plexure came out of a request for a plunderphonic work. And I think almost everything I do has a very practical side. And the practicality with Plexure was trying to do a work that had some kind of quotational integrity, and at the same time was something that could be released on a small record label without running into any major licensing problems.
So the method then is legal, taking bits of existing copyrighted music and rearranging them is not illegal?
Well, I think no one would disagree with the fact that people can do whatever they like in the privacy of their own homes. at least in Canada, there's this, you know, Pierre Trudeau once said, the government's job, and it's not the government's job to get into the bedrooms of the nation. And, you know, a lot of people have their little home studios in their bedrooms now, and it's one of the activities that people participate in is fooling around with the music that they have. Where it becomes contentious is when people start marketing stuff that is in some way obviously derived from something else. So if people make a lot of money, then lawsuits, especially in the United States, seem to arise. Since very few of my things have made money, I just haven't been involved in very many of these contentious legal situations. Pretty little angel eye.
And make my explanation a little more subtle,
he remarked. Pink curtains rattled just across the passage. A bell rang up a flight of stairs and into a room to be at the back of the queer blinds of clear, but this particular window upstairs, unshuttered. In appearance, switch deep projections into velvet pile. In addition, corner to the side of the house, pointed upward, dimmed some steps in her hand. The secret wood square box band, motionless, little, typical, several things, is a small, white, underground position den, dark dot and glare. At the guest with lifted eyebrows. Contents filled the room in her hand. Then the latter sat down on a hard chair, looking through cunningly contrived peepholes, banging valuable jewels till the police come, completely unconscious of the fact Nurse Smith dropped, palpitating sighs, awaiting presently a suitable moment. And
presently the police came at last.
Aha, replied baffled, bogus inspector. Bingo, Bailey, blunt, banging, busily baffled, bogus inspector, black beard, butcher, blitz, vets, bored, behind him. But at that moment,
the opportunity arose
for mystery,
murder,
and, wait a minute.
That was John Oswald's Case of Death, which is a track on Discosphere. How does somebody get started making this kind of music? You mentioned the kind of do-it-yourself nature, people kind of working on this in their home studios. What are some things that people might need to keep in mind in terms of making music by plundering samples?
I think just one thing, curiosity. It's a listener's game. Most of the things I do don't happen in real time. So I sit around for a period longer than it takes to listen to a song and put something together. And the whole purpose of it for me is to get to that point where I can just sit back and listen to it.
Your work resonates with me with a tradition in experimental or avant-garde literature. I'm thinking of William Burroughs and his cut-ups. You've actually done some work with William Burroughs' speech. Can you tell me a little bit about that project?
This would be one of, I guess, my first examples of plunderphonics was in the early 70s. I was doing things that were stimulated by Burroughs' ideas and examples of cut-ups. And I thought of taking things into the audio realm. I was very attractive to Burroughs' reading voice and used that as a source for doing various things. And there was going to be one example on the Plunderphonics box set retrospective that ended up not being used for technical reasons, or for two technical reasons. One is that a lot of the Burroughs pieces were designed to be pieces that would exist forwards in time and backwards in time. And the example that was going to be on Plunderphonics, that just didn't fit in that space that you can make available in a CD before the first track starts, which is an area where you, in order to hear that, you have to trace backwards through with your rewind button on your CD player to get to the start of this. So then you hear something backwards on most CD players, and then you end up hearing it frontwards, and it seemed like an ideal place to put one of these pieces. This piece called I Got is based on the phrase I Got, and takes advantage of the fact that, especially in Burroughs' pronunciation, the phrase I Got is an acoustic palindrome. It sounds like I got both ways. So the piece, which I'll just play for you now so you can hear it.
Well, what does this? Why, I got screams. Say, Jimmy, I got a lot. I got morphine. I got scus. I got years.
And then there's a reverse phrase, which I think ends with, I got out, says the dwarf. Half those I gots were frontwards, him speaking frontwards, and half of them were backwards, but I couldn't tell you which is which. So the Burroughs pieces were plunderphonic in that they were taking this existing canon, being William Burroughs reading his texts and transforming them in some way.
Plunderphonics has achieved something of a more mainstream presence these days. People like the Grateful Dead and Elektra have commissioned you to produce plunderphonic CDs of their material. Can you just describe those projects for us?
Chronologically, in the case of Elektra, some executives there, the president of Elektra Music, the president of Nonsuch Music, which is the new music arm of Elektra, were both impressed with the Plunderphonic CD and thought that it would be a good idea for me to do the same thing with anything I felt fit to choose, or I felt was fit to use from on their label. In the case of the Grateful Dead, there was an invitation to do something brief based on the Grateful Dead for the Grateful Dead Radio Hour. It was an invitation that I turned down on several occasions because I couldn't really think of anything that was worthwhile and brief that one could do with the Grateful Dead. So after being asked several times, I suggested that perhaps it would be interesting to do a more long-winded project. And as a result, something I think which is very long-winded eventually came out. And then one of the pieces, which was based on Dark Star, seemed to fill up a CD, and then it overflowed in a CD and came out as two CDs in a kind of serial fashion. It was a bit of a cliffhanger for a while. And that's now available as a two CD set.
Thank you.
John, can you tell me a little bit about how you put that together?
Greyfolded is entirely taken from concert recordings of a particular Grateful Dead song, which was a vehicle for a lot of improvisation, called Dark Star, which is, I gather, the holy grail of the Grateful Dead music. There was a period of several years where they didn't play this particular song, and there'd be people in the audience holding signs saying it's been 300 and some odd concerts since the last time you played Dark Star. So it seemed like a good place to start with a portrait of the Grateful Dead. There's various kinds of transformations of the combination of these 25 years and over 100 concerts of the Grateful Dead's music. Things are almost always in juxtaposition with other things. So you'll have a bit of the Grateful Dead playing in 1992, superimposed on a bit of them playing in 1969, for instance. And an example of this transformation is based on the fact that when they first started playing the song, they played it very fast. And in almost every subsequent concert from those first instances, they played it just a little bit slower. So just luckily, the fastest version and the slowest version worked out in a way that they're rhythmically coordinated. The fast version plays as a triplet over the slow version. So there's just a place where you can segue on two things in a way that sounds very normal. It sounds like people could be playing this, but really is the group at two very different stages of their exploration of this particular song.
In many ways, when I listen to this, I think this is perhaps the most accessible of the music of yours that I can think of. It's the most kind of traditionally rhythmic. What do fans of Plunderphonics think about Greyfolded?
Well, those qualities are things that I think most fans of Plunderphonic would find somewhat repulsive. So they're particularly, say, fans of Plecture, which is extremely intricate rhythmically, although it's really designed in the same sort of way as Greyfolded. Technically, there's a lot of similarities between Plecture and Greyfolded.
Plunderphonics has a kind of very technological root to it. It comes of age in the 80s, at the time when samplers, musical samplers, are becoming very commonplace amongst musicians and kind of make Plunderphonics, if not possible, certainly much easier than when we were working with tape. And I think we're experiencing a very similar kind of revolution in production technology today with a personal computer-based digital audio editor. Do you think that we're going to experience, or do you think that we are experiencing a similar kind of quantum leap in musical innovation with the PC-based digital audio editor? Is it inviting anyone to find a new kind of music in the same way that the sampler did?
No.
Would you elaborate on that? No.
Almost all the ways I use computers are analogous to ways that I worked before I used computers. There are a myriad of things that you can do with computers that haven't been tried yet, and I haven't tried yet. So, who knows what's going to happen? Who knows what's happening right now? The machinery that you're mentioning is really designed, audio editors are really designed to have a lot of similarities to the tape recorders, for instance, that they replaced. There is an aspect to working on a computer in a multi-track kind of recording studio situation that I find very attractive, that I tried to enable in my system as much as possible when I was working with tape recorders, and that's the idea of being able to slide things in time in relation to each other. Almost all multi-track recording is done in such a way that you want to link something, a performance up as it's being recorded with other performances, and you want them to be locked there. I've always been interested in flying things around in time, having a sort of Tralfalmadorian sense of where things can be in relation to other things. And that's very easy to do in the computer. Some people never do that. They just, you know, continue to try to lock performances into the groove and get quite irritated when things get out of place in their computer and they can't figure out where it was before. It's something that random access aspect that's been quite useful and continuing to work for me.
That was Mad Mod from John Oswald's Plecture.
John Oswald was profiled by Radio Radio. Our thanks to Martin Spinelli, the producer of the show. If you'd like more info about Radio Radio, visit their website, earpc.buffalo.edu/sound. This has been Sonic Boom Radio. If you want to write to us, please do at sonicboomradio@yahoo.com. For a list of everything we play, please visit the website, www.geocities.com/sonicboomradio. I am Dr. Boom. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.